Episode 213, September 28th, 2015.
Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.
This is the Rob and Joe Show.
The Dave Chappelle and Louis C.K. of Fire Hall Comedy.
The Rob and Joe Show.
This is the racist Rob and racist Joe Show.
Some of their best friends are black.
The Rob and Joe Show, my two favorite guys.
You're listening to the Rob and Joe Show.
Come on, everybody, let's get to the brainstorming.
I worked with Rob and Joe before, and they do an amazing job.
Go back on that Rob and Joe Show.
The Rob and Joe Show. Now on
with the countdown. With a combined 73 firings, if you count marriages in the Baltimore Comedy Factory, here's Rob Mayer and Joe Robinson.
So I'm sitting in a TGI Fridays, Joe, in Hartford, Connecticut.
I already like the way this is starting.
Starting off good. There's an attractive couple next to me. She was super hot. He was a good-looking guy, but they were a good-looking couple. And I'm eavesdropping, and they definitely appear to be on a first date. So I look over a minute later. They're making out, going after it. I'm like, good for you, buddy.
Hold on. Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, I'm happy. I'm like, good for you. You got this. So then I look back another minute later. He has his cell phone out, and he's telling her all about his fantasy football team.
Did you like that move, or you didn't like it?
Do I like that move? He's making out with this hot chick. He stops it. He's literally breaking down his decisions that week on who he started.
Well, I mean, he can't be that big of a football fan. Was it during football games?
It was Sunday night, so all the games were over.
Oh, even the late game.
Yes.
Hmm. Or maybe. Now, how did you know they were on a first date? What was said?
I could just tell by him. They were each giving backgrounds on their lives. Yeah, well, I used to work here, and then I did this, and then I had moved, went to college here. It's just, you know, things that you would say to someone that you would only say the first time you've met, essentially.
Now, here's the deal with me. I'm on a first date. The chick's hot. I look how I look. Mm-hmm. And I think that I want to make out with this chick. I'm still going to wait till I get out of the restaurant.
Yeah, it seemed very high schoolish, and they were probably in their 20s, so they were definitely younger than me, obviously. But I'm thinking if you're making out at the bar, once you stop making out, you say you want to get out of here.
Of course, right.
But he says no. I want to talk about Alfred Morris.
Yeah, I mean, definitely what I would say. But if I was getting a vibe that, hey, this can go down, I'd be like, oh my God, I really want to kiss you. Can we get out of here? I could say that. You know what I mean? And then it's like, yes. If a girl's willing to make out with you inside of TGI Fridays, she's also willing to get out of there.
Yes, I think if she's going to make out with you at the bar in a restaurant, then she's probably willing to have sex with you in a private bedroom.
Okay, Tawanda dies.
Okay.
You're on a date.
All right. I didn't kill her, right? Like, I didn't.
No.
Okay.
I that's the scenario where you're single. I think that's nicest thing, right?
She can't have just left me. She has to die.
Well, I don't want to say that you guys could break up. So in this scenario, the only way for you to be single is she's dead, okay? Okay,
gotcha.
So Tawanda dies. Here you are. You're on a date. Mm-hmm. This girl says, hey, I want to make out with you. You're in Applebee's or wherever the hell you are. Mm-hmm. Do you say, let's get out of here, or do you just start making out right there?
I think I'd start making out right there.
You would?
Yeah.
I would.
I mean, not a full thing, but, you know, a little kiss, a little bit of tongue, not a full session.
I'd probably make a joke out of it. I'd probably be like, what's wrong with you, perv? Can we leave this restaurant? Can we make out in the parking lot? Do we have to do it right here?
Well, I think that's starting the foreplay. I think that's starting the ball rolling.
I wouldn't do it. See, I'd try to be hilarious about it, but I don't think I would.
The walk to the car. The walk to the car, she might change your mind if you haven't started making out already.
No, I have a feeling if I already know that I'm going to do that, then she'll be willing to wait till we get to the car. I might be like, check, please, or make some kind of joke. Or I might be like, well, I don't want to make out, but can I finger you? You know, something, whatever. Something hilarious.
That's hilarious.
But no,
can I finger you here at TGI Fridays?
I thought it was TGI Fingers. No, but yeah.
Thank God I fingered her.
I mean, I can't at this age be making out with somebody in the middle of a bar. Now, I kiss my girlfriend when we're out. I do, but we don't just make out.
So there's no scenario you're going to make out in public.
I mean, I guess I would if she goes, look, you're not going to bang me unless you make out with me right now. I'd be like, all right, I guess we're going to make out.
What about if you're drunk and you're outside at some outside bar? It's night. It's dark.
I guess I would.
You're in Punta Cana.
That's different. Okay, that's different. If I'm on like
Joe
on vacation,
and Katie, by the way, breaking show news, Joe and Katie are going to Punta Cana next week.
I always thought Punta was a bad word in like Espanol. It's not. Yeah.
I don't know. What the hell do I know?
Doesn't it mean something bad?
Well, I'm pretty sure it doesn't if they have a place that people go there, a tourist attraction.
It means fingering in TGI Fridays.
Yes. Marcus, enough.
That's Jesus. Come on. It was Laura Reuter's birthday yesterday. She's trying to enjoy the show.
Yeah, Marcus. I forgot to wish Laura a happy birthday. I guess I'll do that right now on the show.
Yeah, I think that's better than a Facebook post. Happy birthday, Laura. We tried to get Marcus to knock on your door, do a singing telegram. Hilarious. No, yeah, we'll get back to my Hartford trip because I was at the Funny Bone. Some good times there. But this is your first official vacation with Katie?
We went to Miami to go see the Ravens and the Dolphins.
Wasn't that with a bunch of people?
It was. Okay. We've been to a bed and breakfast, we've been into the Ocean City. You know, we have gone places, but we have gotten on a plane. We went to Miami, but
this is the first time we've had to use a plane with just the two of you.
And had to use passports, yeah.
Yeah. Now, so there's not going to be a show next week, by the way, but that's okay, because it was an amazing show that will update all the drama in Punta Cana. Are you concerned? Because, like, look, obviously we all know Katie's much hotter than you, but, you know, when you're walking in the mall or something, it doesn't stand out as much as when she's in a bikini on the beach and you're wearing whatever the fuck.
Yeah. They're just going to be like, oh, my God, that guy must be rich. And then I'm not. It makes no sense at all.
Are you going to act like you're rich? Are you going
to
be like,
I don't have to act like I'm rich. Everybody's going to think I'm rich. I mean, agreed. Everybody's like, oh, that guy must be a billionaire. I'm like, nope. Just a regular job, working a cubicle.
I mean, these pictures are going to look ridiculous. She's going to be looking amazing. And you're going to have like some wolf bathing suit on or something.
Somebody said in chat, will Joe propose? And then the next person said, Joe is hot. Well, thank you, Agent Orgasm. I hope you're a chick, but I'll take it either way.
Are you are you tanning first to try to get a little color up there?
It's weird you said that, because Katie's like, I'm going to go tanning. I go, I can't do that. I can't. She goes, yes, you need to.
You do, I think. You're going to get burnt.
You think?
It's almost too late. I mean, you know, you got a week now, right?
All right. Well, I mean, I guess I could go, you know. There's no way I can. We got the dress rehearsal tomorrow. I got to write Katie and I have to choreograph a dance tonight.
Yeah.
We got the dress rehearsal tomorrow. Wednesday, I got my kids. Thursday, if you want to see me, I'll be at Union Jackson, Annapolis. It's some sort of a pre-game party for the Ravens game. Friday is the show. Saturday, I leave for Punta Cana. I can't tan.
Oh, I want to go with you to that Union Jackson.
Yeah, of course.
Hey, why don't you just walk around all day outside with your shirt off?
I don't think it's sunny enough anymore to get tanned or burned, right?
Well, you can get a little bit, I think, to help you out. Be awkward when you're walking into places topless. How are you feeling right now about your body on a on a one being the worst you've ever felt, 10 the best you've ever felt.
Oh, I'm at like a 3. I started working out pretty regularly, getting preparing for this vacation. And then like 3 weeks ago, I just stopped because I, you know, busy I've been. I mean, I don't want to be one of those guys. I sound like Robbie. But there was one day, there was one like 12-day stretch where every day I just had something, every single day, no time for myself, no nothing. Of course, you know, I got a day job. Then I got night jobs. I got no free time. Listen to my voice. I got party voice.
Yeah, I have the same deal, man. I had a lot of just shows this weekend. My voice is struggling. No, you've been very busy. You've been super busy. So you, but you just said, to hell with it. You're just going to be who you are.
I mean, well, I don't know that I have a choice other than not going.
Right. Now, are you, is this an all-inclusive situation?
Yeah.
All right, so you're going to be drinking.
Yep.
Are you going to, you're going to get your fruity drinks and all that?
Well, you know, it's socially acceptable at these places. People who know me know I'm not, I wouldn't say I'm not a drinker. I say that, that's not true. I will have a drink, but I don't like to drink. I don't like beer, I don't like wine, and I don't like mixed drinks unless they're frozen and they come out of a pineapple or out of a coconut. But you can't order those except for unless you're on vacation. And I, you know, I'm going to affect my reality, you know, and the only way to do that in that place is, you know, with a coconut and a straw.
Has she seen you drunk?
I'm sorry?
Has Katie seen you drunk?
Yeah, she has. I got drunk at Artscape, not this year, but the year before, on Orange Crushes.
What would you more likely do? What would you rather do? Make out with Katie at the bar at TJ Fridays or order three, like, fruity, flowery umbrella drinks?
At the TGI Friday?
Yeah, here in America. Yeah.
Huh, I'd rather make out with her, I think. You know, but again, how long? How long is the make out? If we're making out for 30 seconds, I'll do it. But if we have to make out for like 5 minutes in a public place, you know, and I love making out with her, but let's, can we just go to the car? It's you know, it takes 2 minutes.
Well, have fun, man. It's going to hope take a lot of pictures. I'm sure you'll be tweeting about it. You're very active on Twitter and Facebook.
Yep, that's true. I sent out a tweet like 3 days ago.
Now, while you're going to Punta Cana, your brother Robbie is going to the Apple Butter Festival in West Virginia. Is that correct, Robbie?
Yes, I'm taking my girlfriend for the first time.
Oh, it's her first time being there?
Yes, we didn't go last year.
Okay. And is there anyone going to look like her there?
I don't think any Asians will be there at whatsoever.
Well, let me say something real quick. About, I don't know, maybe this was in the last 5 years. The college... in Salem, West Virginia, where the Apple Butter Festival takes place, was purchased by the Japanese.
Oh, that's true.
So what used to be in that town was just a bunch of backwards hillbillies and Asian college students. That's all that was there. Now, I think that it's since it's no longer owned by the Japanese, if I'm not mistaken, Salem College. But, you know, it's not too long since. It's not like they're not used to seeing, you know, the Asians. They are.
Are there going to be some Asian-themed apple butter, some want-flavored apple butter, some ginseng apple butter?
Is she bringing food, Robbie, like she did to the beach?
Maybe.
Now, she's going to meet some of your more redneck family members, correct?
Yes.
Now, I can't understand redneck sometimes, let alone how's she going to deal with that?
I think that it's going to be a little bit of a culture shock for her, but I asked her cousin and her husband, I said, do you think she'll have more culture shock going to West Virginia or I'm going to have more culture shock going to Taiwan? And they said, no contest. It's going to be you who's going to experience more culture shock.
Well, of course, Robbie, she's been here a while. You know what I mean? She also speaks the language. I mean, poorly, but she speaks it, right? You don't know, you don't speak Taiwanese at all and you've never been there.
She doesn't speak Taiwanese either.
Whatever the language is, that's what she, what is, I'm sorry, Robbie, what is it?
People, it's like.
Can you just say what the name of it is?
She's able to communicate there, I'm sure.
Taiwanese are like our indigenous Americans. There's less people who speak Taiwanese. Most people speak Mandarin.
Okay. Whatever the spoken languages of the country, I'm sure she can speak it, correct?
Robbie?
She knows Mandarin fluently.
Okay. So they, all right.
He won't Robbie's like say purposely evasive. I'm not sure what he's doing. Yeah.
It's weird. Okay.
She can go over there and talk to people, right, Robbie?
Of course.
Okay. Right. So okay.
Just had to get that out.
But here's the deal. Like, I have one cousin, like my cousin Steve. I mean, he literally looks like a guy from Sons of Anarchy, but like the worst guy.
Yeah. Yeah, he does.
He wears, you know those wolf shirts that I wear kind of ironically? He looks at him, he's like, yes, you did it. Best shirt ever. He's bandanas. He has a, he's got a tattoo on his body that says FTW. It's got a globe and a middle finger on it.
What does that mean?
It means fuck the world is what it means. And he had that permanently put on his body. My cousin Steve.
Is the middle finger right over Taiwan?
It's yep. So he'll be there.
How much money for you to put that tattoo on your body for life?
Jeez. Where am I putting it?
You're putting it on your neck.
I mean, it's a lot. You understand? To get that, it's a lot. Now, I'd have to have it removed. How long do I have it?
No, forever.
Well, to have it forever, I'd have to have a place where, you know, because I would get fired from my job.
Okay. Well, obviously, if you got $1 billion, you wouldn't care. So there is a number.
No. I know. That's what I'm saying. It's got to be a number where I don't have to go back to work. I don't know. $5 million, I guess.
Okay. Because you could still do all your other jobs. You still do radio. You still do comedy. You still do murder mystery shows.
Yeah, I feel like my jobs would dry up, though, if I had a fuck the world tattoo on my neck.
You'd have to change your act. Your act would have to be very angry. And
I mean, our friend Dan K. Charnley has a tattoo on his neck. I think it just says Charnley, right?
Yeah, look how his career is going.
Yeah, and he's doing horribly, right? That's his name. Can't have fuck the world on your neck.
All right, what about this tramp stamp?
No, a tramp stamp I'd probably do for, I don't know, $20,000.
But you realize that, I mean, Katie knows you. She loves you. But if anyone after Katie, if God forbid something happens, they're going to see that. It's pretty lame. I mean, that's hard to overcome that.
Yeah, but I just said before, I said, listen to me, before we do this, I'm letting you know I lost a bet and I made, and I'll lie about the number. Say they gave me $500,000. I won't tell the real number. So just so you'll know, that's why you see it.
All right. What if it's right on your ass? Your entire ass is the globe.
Well, you mean
middle finger,
and the finger is in the middle or whatever.
Yep.
How much for that? I mean, it's like again. I mean, for that. I mean, I get the tramp stamp for 20. That, yeah. Not much more. 25, I guess.
Well, no one will
Who's
see
paying
that.
Me to do this? Yeah. What's that?
Chris or Steve will pay you.
So. Chris or Steve and I are no longer. By the way, somebody in chat is called Racist Restivo Supports Rob.
Yes. Eric Datcher mentioned that on Twitter the other day.
Can I ask a question about Restivo while we're at it?
Sure.
Is he included in Best Of or not included in Best Of?
What did he do?
Oh, you mean his
segment that we
I think it should be included. Yeah.
Well, what segment?
The one with his only segment where we had him on the show where he did his impressions.
I thought we already did that.
No, that was the very beginning of this last year. Yeah. Four.
I think it should be edited down, not the whole thing. But
of course, awesome. It's in Best Of. Yeah, it's not like we're saying this guy's just amazing. No, I mean, you know,
this band goes. That's all.
Yeah, well, we're shitting on him. Speaking of people not liking us, it looks like Tim is softening his anger towards us. He started the texting. He invited us all to watch football Sunday. And your former landlord, Phil, said that he couldn't do it. And this is where Phil did something that I wouldn't do. I probably would have lied and not said the reason that he can't do it. But he told the truth. He's going with his fiance to she's pregnant, to a 6.5-hour birthing class on football Sunday. So, of course, Tim is just lighting into him.
Well, look, I mean, in Tim's defense, what the fuck, right? I mean,
oh, no, he should. We all were. We all were busted.
6.5 hours?
Yes.
And our friend Vegas said it so perfectly. He goes, you realize when you get there, you don't use any of that. None of it you'll use. They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
You understand that before, you know, civilization, people were born. It's going to happen. Don't worry about it. It'll happen. You don't have to breathe a certain way or whatever. They'll tell you what to do when you get there, and they'll drug you.
No, I understand it. The mother is taking the birthing class because she wants to do everything possible to make sure that it's the first child, that everything goes smoothly. And the father is taking it to make the mother happy so he doesn't have to get, there's not going to be a fight. That's why you're doing it.
You know, when I was born, you couldn't go in the delivery room. The dad sat out in the smoking area. You got to smoke in the hospital. Nice. And you gave out cigars. And once your baby was out, they delivered it. They delivered you the baby.
Here you go. Parents out there hitting on every nurse.
Exactly. Now, if you don't go into the delivery room, you're the worst person alive. You understand? It went from smoking and waiting for the baby to arrive to now you're the Antichrist. If for some reason you don't make it into the delivery room.
Well, I'd rather be smoking.
No
let's
doubt.
Let's take a break. We'll come back, tell all about my trip to Hartford, Connecticut, talk about this Steve Ranazzisi guy. We've been meaning to talk about it. And more news from the quadriplegic comedian. Rob and Joe shall be right back.
Hey, it's Justin from the Justin Scott and Spiegel Morning Show. You may remember me from my critically acclaimed role as Bucky in Death of a Dentist. Well, my next star turn will be in a show called The Newly Dead Game, another original, hilarious, interactive comedy whodunit from the minds of Rob and Joe. Imagine, you're in a TV studio at a taping of the very popular game show Clash of Couples. I'll have a starring role, and if you're very, very lucky, you might play a part too. You might even be the murderer. It's going to be incredible, and there's going to be a limited number of performances, so don't miss it.
Next performance, October 2nd at the Arlington Cinema and Draft House. Tickets on sale now. For upcoming show dates and more info, visit facebook.com/DieLaughingProductions or robinjoe.com.
Now back to the Rob and Joe Show.
So I've mentioned this guy before, Rob Florio. He's a nice guy. He comes to my open mic at Wits End. I call him a quadriplegic. I think that's what he is. He's in this sort of standing chair kind of thing that is motorized. He has a nurse with him at all times. And he comes to my open mic. And he also paints with his mouth. Puts the
paintbrush
in his mouth. He's probably better at painting than he is at comedy.
Okay.
Now, I'm not being a dick. So first of all, dude's got a really hard life. If this gives him joy, I'm always going to put you on. If this gives you happiness and you look forward to it, God bless you. Come on stage. Do whatever you want. I mean, you deserve it. But he had the other night a cameraman from Fox 45 News
there.
To do a thing on him. And I'm, it doesn't take courage to do stand-up comedy if there's no possible way you can bomb.
Right.
Because no one is ever going to boo this guy or heckle him because you'd be a monster. So there's no risk. So it doesn't take any courage. Now, painting... You see a painting hang on a wall. You don't know who did that. You could say that sucks and not know that this guy did it. Now, if he knew he did it, you wouldn't say that. But my point is, only show him on stage if he's funny. There's no courage for him to get on stage and do this. So there's no real story there. That's my
point. Well, that's the thing. But Fox 45, you understand, when they show up, somebody pitched them the idea that, hey, there's a comic, he's a quadriplegic, and he's performing at this thing. You understand, it's just like when you say to somebody at work, hey, I do stand-up comedy, okay? And then they say, oh, cool. But then they show up, and it's eight people at some sort of, open mic bar show. And then it isn't what, then the bloom's off the rose, right?
Yeah.
So who knows how Fox 45 is going to edit it. And if they're responsible, the responsible thing for them to do would be to abort the whole thing. Seriously.
That's well, they the might... He was going to tell me when it was going to air, and he hasn't got back to me. I said it on stage, that's going to be a tough job for the editor to figure out what, because first of all, a lot of it's dirty. I mean, he's trying to clean it up, but he's still talking about performing oral sex on women. Okay. So that's, you can't talk about
that. Is?
Yes.
You know, I've had an interaction with this guy.
He said that she tastes like Skittles. No.
he asked me when I was running the contest, he said, hey, he was talking to a friend of ours, Jeremy Hall, and said to contact you about doing the contest at the Comedy Factory. And I said, hey, when they do another show, you're in. He goes, thanks. Then Look, now, by the way, I've known this guy. Hold on. Let me just take a look. This is 7:05. I responded within a couple minutes. He immediately responds, can I suggest putting a ramp to get on stage? He's now making demands. So I think this is a guy who doesn't know his own limitation or worth. You know, I think, and again, I'm sure that there's, what's it, the Citizens with Disabilities Act or whatever. Right. And yes, you need to make sure that people are accommodated. But he doesn't need to be accommodated if he's a horrible comic. It means they'll accommodate him if he's worthy of being on the stage. But his disability, he's not being hampered because of his disability. He's being hampered because he's not funny. Now, you're not going to say these things. I know you. But at the end of the day, he's got a responsibility to be funny. And if he's not, he has a responsibility to quit.
And I felt like he didn't perform he performed worse the other night than normal. And I thought maybe he's nervous. But how can you tell if he's nervous? He can hardly move. So, you know what I mean? It's like he doesn't have enough movement to show that he's nervous. Does that make sense?
I was talking about this the other day. And this guy respects you and your opinion. But I know you. You won't tell him to quit. I know you won't.
I don't want him to quit. Because if it gives him joy, that's more important.
I understand that, but it's bad for the craft. Look, do something else.
This is what somebody said to me, a comic. I won't say his name because he didn't say it on stage. But this is what he said to me in the back. He said, watching this guy makes me want to become a doctor. It makes me want to go to medical school, become a doctor, figure out what his problem is, cure it, make it so he can stand up and walk around so then I can tell him he's not funny.
That sounds like somebody I know, but look, I'll let you off the hook. It's not you, but hopefully he's listening. I haven't seen him.
And I like him, and he brings people.
And that's one of the things. We've talked about this before with comics that we like, comics that we don't like. For some reason, people that want to do stand-up comedy, telling them they're not funny is like saying the N-word to a black person. But that's not – not being funny is not a horrible thing. Be a good person. No. Be great at something else. There's nothing wrong with not being able to do stand-up comedy.
People can't.
Of course. But again, we talk about this all the time. People get to say they're a comic if they perform and they want to be defined that way. So it becomes not about whether or not you're funny. It's about whether or not you're performing. So what that means, and I get that. So I get the people, they want to belong to something. We see it all the time over Facebook, people jumping into these different groups. People want to belong. But whose responsibility is it to tell this person that this is not a good thing? It's not theirs, because they're getting what they want out of it. They are. They're getting what they want.
Well, but he deserves to get something out of it. He's not just a regular guy. I mean,
no, but he can be affirmed in other ways. Again, you hurt the craft when what happens if he performs? He goes, hey, I'm going to be here every week. And there's somebody in the audience that came to see a friend. Yeah. If that friend's not there, are they ever coming back?
I don't know. I mean,
it's
the
bad.
Last week
it's
he says to me,
art.
He says he wants to get into acting.
To do what? Talk about typecast. What's he going to be, a pimp?
If you show up to an audition, you see him in line, and you're like, well, I'm clearly at the wrong audition.
Right. Now, there are much less roles for him, but the roles that are available for him, he's probably got a good shot at. But still, I mean, look.
How would he feel if someone who isn't disabled got the role that he went after?
He feels bad every time he doesn't have success. I'm sure he's actually overachieving by doing what he's doing now.
Yes.
But, you know, this is what I want to make it as clear as I possibly. There are people that we've grown up with that I've cared deeply about. Good friend of ours, Bird Knight. He's just not that funny. There's people that I really love that just weren't that funny. And you know what Bird Knight did? He stopped doing comedy. He did. He stopped doing it.
Because of you, Joe?
I don't think so, but that's the responsible thing to do. It is. It's the responsible thing to do. But I will tell you, if you really want an honest opinion of your stand-up, come to me. Don't come to Rob. Rob, this isn't a criticism, but, you know, you can't be objective. You're too nice.
Well, this is what I'll do, is I will shit on you from the stage because I want to get last. Perfect example, I just did 6 shows at the Hartford Funny Bone. Maranzio Vance is a cool comic. I worked with him a few months ago in Dayton, Ohio. He requested that he brought me. And rather than putting me up in the comedy condo, he got me into the hotel, which I didn't realize that he had done. So super sweet. So for whatever reason, the booker, the manager, normally when you have a run of shows, it's the same lineup every night. Same MC, same feature, same headliner. Well, this guy, I guess he's new to booking, and he wanted to sort of try out several different MCs. So we had a different one every night. And there was one Thursday, the same guy, the guy did two shows Friday, two Saturday, one Sunday. The Thursday, Friday, and Sunday guys were all very funny. They all did a really good job. I was impressed. And the guy Saturday, super nice guy, but I could tell right off the bat that this is probably, it might not go as well. He was just chugging water. That seemed like a nervous thing. Then it's typical in a comedy club, they'll start playing a video before the show of all the upcoming comedians and a few, like 30 seconds of their act. And then they'll play like a intro song, music, a few seconds of that. And then welcome to the Funny Bone, your headliner, da, 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 and your MC, boom. And then the show starts. So the video is playing and the MC comes back into the green room. And he's like, yeah, they're still letting people in. I'm like, dude, I think the video is playing, right? He goes, yeah. I said, well, they're starting. This is
he doesn't know.
It doesn't matter. People are still walking in. They don't care about that. This is the point of no routine. They're about to start the show, and you're in here. So he has to run out.
Did he run, or did he try to be cool?
No, he ran out, but he got there in time. But he definitely was 30 seconds of his conversation. His name is announced, so it's like you need to get out there. So I go in. I'm like, I got to watch this, and he tells. I got to think it was a 3-minute bit about him going to some bagel place and asking for a little bit of cream cheese, and they give him a lot of cream cheese. And apparently this keeps happening, and he keeps talking about it. And it's – no one really relates to that. I don't think that's a thing that people –
Yeah, because consider. You would just take the cream cheese off.
Right.
It'd be different if you ask for a lot of cream cheese and they put a little. There's nothing you can do. But if you ask for a little cream cheese, you just get a knife, and which they'll have available, and you'll just scrape it off. Okay, go ahead.
But it's not getting any last, but he keeps going. He got to tell the end. So I get up there, and I'm like, first of all, I don't have any jokes about fucking cream cheese, okay? Crowd is like, yay, you know? Then I'm like, dude, you know why they gave you a ton of cream cheese? Because you didn't shut the fuck up about it. Stop being a dick, all right? So I just start bashing him, and the crowd goes crazy. And then, you know, but he was cool about it. But that's my way of saying, if you're not going to be funny, I'm gonna go on stage and get it's going to help me. I'm going to get laughs off your struggles.
Is Agent Orgasm in chat? Is that Captain Cupcake, Robbie?
I don't think so.
Oh, because he says, who said I was hot earlier, so I like this guy, but he says, isn't funny a subjective term? No, it's not a subjective term. It's not. If no one's laughing, you're not funny. That's your job, is to make people laugh. If I went up there and I said, hey, I'm a singer, and I just screamed, and then they say, oh, that guy's no good. I go, well, that's your opinion, man. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, I mean,
it doesn't work like that.
There are comics that I think that I know do really well that I don't find funny. So, but I wouldn't tell them to quit because I don't think they're funny doesn't mean they're not funny. But if someone is bombing every week, they're not funny. I mean, it's like I'm not a big Frank Caliendo guy, but he crushes.
Yeah,
so
right.
I would never say to him, "Well, you shouldn't do it. You're not cut out for this."
Yeah, you need to stop doing these voices.
You need to stop making $1 million a year. No, I think if someone literally bombs every show, I think you can say pretty fairly, "Look, you're not funny." You have comics not laughing. You have a crowd full of different ages and races and genders. If all those people don't think you're funny, then you're not funny. That's just how it is.
It's interesting. You told a story the last time I saw you about this comic that you saw at an open mic, and he would bring friends, and his friends wouldn't buy anything, but he was not funny, and he would just go up there and bomb week after week after week. Eventually,
yes. You
stopped seeing him, but then you found out he was running his own room, and this is
yes.
a year later, and then you went to that room, and he's still there bombing. He doesn't. You understand?
It's unbelievable to me. Yeah,
it's a bomb just for a couple years straight. You know what it feels like to bomb? I mean, it just rips your soul out to bomb. But just to do it over, that's why I see guys like Tom Myers. He's a local comic here who just bombs. I don't know. I'm not without exaggeration. I don't know, 95% of the time, maybe more than that.
Yes.
But to see that, to do that means one of two things. Either it's so important that you're a comic that you just endure, or you just are that unaware of yourself.
I think you're unaware. And I also think some of these guys and girls, they judge how their set was, how they told their jokes. Like if I went up and sang the national anthem and I remembered every word, that doesn't mean I sang it well. That just means I memorized it.
The other thing is because the Rob Mayers of the world and other people that'll come and they go, hey, how'd I do? And people will tell them they did well.
I don't know. I don't do that. I try to avoid it, or I'll say something that they did do well and something I would.
That's why it's almost like when you ask a woman, she goes, how old do you think I am? And then you guess your age about 10 years younger than you think she really is. To protect yourself. We talked about this the other day. Yes. You always protect yourself. It's the same thing. And that's the reason that every woman thinks that they're younger than they really are, because they're being misinformed. And that's a responsibility that we have as people who have been doing this, or people that are running the room, to make sure that people know what really happened. And I think we're so worried about hurting people's feelings that we're willing to hurt the show. And
I agree with that. Yeah. I mean, people say, why does it bother you? What does hurt the product if people
it
come?
It does, because what's going to happen is there are people that say, hey, that's the first comedy show I've ever been to. That was great. I hear it all the time. And I go, well, I know why. Because a lot of times people's first comedy show is when, you know, this guy in the quadriplegic is coming up to do comedy. And they go, oh, he's doing comedy. Let's go see him. And they go, wow, comedy sucks. Well, no, it doesn't suck. It's amazing. That comedy sucks.
Right.
So, again, there's plenty of hilarious comics. I just did a show in Salisbury in front of, I don't know, 40 people maybe. It was great. It was a great show. It was a comic I mentioned before, Jeremy Hall. Kim Ambrose came up and did a guest set, and Valance Michaels, and then me. And it was a great time. But there was just a very, very small crowd. But still, they saw funny people. So everybody enjoyed themselves, and everybody had a good time, and they'll come back.
Yeah, yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I'm saying we had some great shows in Hartford. I just wanted to wrap up a couple things on that. Three lesbian couples work at the Hartford Funny Bone.
Couples? Six lesbians work there.
Yeah. I've never been to Connecticut, and I was surprised. First of all, I thought it would be super white. It's very multicultural. That's just me being stupid, I guess. And a lot of lesbians.
That doesn't surprise me, because it's proximity to Vermont, which at one point was the only place you could legally get married. So maybe that's the reason.
Maybe that is. No murmur.
Marcus, scene. Any interjections, Marcus? No?
No.
Okay.
Thank
super.
You.
You must think Laura Reuter's listening.
Surprising number of lesbians. So, but they're laughers, and that's all that matters.
That, you're right.
Guess how many T-shirts I sold? My new T-shirt.
20.
Not 22. Pretty good.
Oh, hey, can I tell a couple stories about the show that I did in Salisbury?
I want you to tell them, please.
So, there's only a few of us. So, obviously, I'm talking to the crowd. You know, we have to get to know each other. It's like if you're at a party and, you know, there's X number of people there, you talk to the people, right?
Sure.
Well, the guy who runs the room, his name is Eric, and I can't pronounce his last name. Can you?
No, I can't.
Jock, it starts with a J, Jocklier, or something like that. Yeah. He puts his parents...
He's the guy whose friend at the... Drafts and Laughs had the hook hand.
Right, exactly. That's right. Not a hook hand, the nub.
The nub, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So he sets his parents like within eyeshot of me. Well, you know I'm going to talk to them.
Sure.
And of course, they've been married for 45 years. So what do you ask a couple that's been married for 45 years?
They're still having sex.
Of course. Mm-hmm. So I start asking him that, and now he starts getting uncomfortable. And when I realize it's his parents... I ask what positions they still do, but
and that's on him. He knows your act.
It's on him. He knew it. He should have warned me ahead of time. It's on him. And sorry, Eric, for not knowing how to pronounce your last name, but that's a little bit on you.
Yeah.
But here's something that happened at the end of the show. At the end of the show, there was a guy, and he was a little scary looking guy. Now, he happened to be a black guy, but that's not why I was scared. He spoke in a manner like he wanted to do business with me. Right. He goes, he's explaining how His brother was a record producer, and they were trying to find what shows to put on around the area. But he kept saying, "I'm not fucking lying to you, man. I'm telling you, he's on his way." Like, he was terrifying me. I was scared, right?
Right.
And I go, "Well, I never accused you of lying." And anyway, I go, "Well, if I can't stay to talk to your brother, the record producer, here's my number." I gave this guy my real phone number, which I'm not too worried about that. What's he going to do, call me in the middle of the night, say he's going to kill me? He doesn't know where I live. But but I didn't want to be there. I didn't want to I don't want to meet his record producer brother. I was scared, right? So I said, "Tell me if this was a good move." I go, Katie walked out the back, and I go, "Oh, let me get my girlfriend, and I'll be right back." And I ran to my car, and we left.
What were you so afraid of?
He was a very intimidating guy. He didn't look or dress like somebody that would be running a show or somebody that I would want to do business with, nor did he speak in a manner that, you follow what I'm saying?
Right,
I mean,
right.
He said fuck 50 times when he's trying to sell me on the idea of driving to Salisbury and doing a room with his record producer brother who was on their way. He also let me know he wasn't lying. Who offers you a gig and says, "I'm not lying"? I'm never, you know what I mean? What is that? I was like, I didn't think for 2 seconds you were lying until now. Now you planted a seed. I think you're lying at this point, right?
Yeah. The second you say that about something, first of all, that's a believable thing on the surface. I want to book you for a show. But when you say I'm not lying, then, yeah.
Then at that point, I definitely wanted him to think that I didn't think he was lying because I was scared of him. So I was like, I don't think you're lying. Here's my number. And I want to give him my real number just in case he tested it. He's like, "Let me call you right now. So you'll have my number." I was like, "Oh, you know what I mean?" So I had to.
Did he call you?
No, I mean, okay. I don't see any.
Robbie, get him on the show.
I don't see any missed calls. Yeah, I don't know what his name is, but I'm sure it's some sort of, it's a street name, whatever it is.
Right.
By the way, when I saw these guys, I saw three guys that didn't look like the rest of the crowd, right? They looked like they were burning down a CVS somewhere. And they were waiting in there, and I'm like, wow, these guys are here to see this comedy show? And two of them left. So I'm like, oh, I wonder if they're casing the joint or whatever. But then this one guy stayed, and that's the guy who offered me work.
Yeah, and he's not lying, though.
Hey, you don't know what was going on in the next room. It was, okay, so...
I've done that room. I had almost no one there. Advantage you on that one.
There was a bar, and there was a bar area where we were performing, and there was another room, and it had a DJ in there, and something was going on in there in Salisbury.
It was a wedding reception.
No, it was a fashion show. It was a fashion show. And if you took a peek at the people in this fashion show, even knowing where I was in Salisbury, I'm thinking this can't be the best Salisbury has to offer, right? I mean, even in Salisbury, right, there's a model caliber of, you know, of inhabitant, right? So I don't even know.
Were they larger women?
They were all shapes and sizes, and they were strange people playing strange music. But
was
white,
black mix, or was it...
Yeah, it was.
Right.
It was. I would say it was leaning more black than white, but there were white people in there too.
So I see more black people putting on fashion shows.
Yeah, that's true. But you know what's strange is that what designer is coming to Salisbury to break out their new winter line, or you know what I mean? It didn't make any sense. I didn't know what was going on.
Was Vera Wang there?
I promise you she wasn't there unless there's somebody who happens to have the same name.
You didn't go in there and try to bust up the fashion show with your Whoop shirt?
No, I was wearing a plaid shirt.
Of course you
were. But that's what happened at that show. And it was a great show, and I would do it again, and I would recommend. Matter of fact, Eric, and I wish I could pronounce his last name. I could probably spell it.
No one can pronounce it.
Yeah. He said the problem is it's summer, and I get that. Because they're so close to the beach, it's hard to fill that room. But then as it starts getting colder and there's less to do, then people start coming out, so...
Yeah, and he booked both of us in the summer, so thanks a lot.
Well, I guess I technically was there in the summer, but, you know, I mean, October is a week away, so people were there.
I was there in July, so. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Steve Ranazzisi at 9/11. Rob and Joe, she'll be right back.
Dog lovers, do you need someone to look after your pet? Turn to Rover. Rover is the free online service that connects you with loving dog sitters near you. Just go to Rover.com. In seconds, you'll be browsing dog sitters in your neighborhood. Go to Rover.com right now, enter promo code RobinJoe, and get your dog's first night free. Join hundreds of thousands of dog lovers who rely on Rover to find a five-star dog sitter. It's fast, easy, and your first night is free when you use promo code RobinJoe. For the best dog sitters near you, remember Rover.com.
Now back to the Robin Joe Show.
That was sexy. It's a comedian. We meant to talk about this last week. I guess this broke a couple weeks ago. But Steve Ranazzisi, he's best known for the show The League. He's also on those Buffalo Wild Wings commercials, which are pretty funny. I just saw him actually at the DC Improv a few months ago. My buddy Brian Parisi was opening up. And apparently, when this guy got into comedy, he started telling this lie that he was working for Merrill Lynch and was right there, 9/11, the 9/11, and had to flee, run out of the buildings, the towers, as planes were crashing in. And he told this heroic story. And who knows if that helped his career or that made him more interesting or bookable. But he's went on to, you know, a lot of success. I believe The League is his show that he created. And it's been on, I don't know, 5-6 seasons now. And he's headlining A-Room. So he's got a hell of a nice career. And he finally has come clean and said he just made it all up. He wasn't working for Merrill Lynch. He wasn't down. He wasn't there. I mean, it's completely bullshit. And I don't know how to feel about this. I mean, it seems creepy to me and icky.
So it doesn't bother me.
Yeah, I've heard people say that.
I'm going to tell you why it doesn't bother me. Let's say, for example, I was applying for a job at your company. Right. And I said that I graduated with a master's in business from University of Maryland. And then I go on and I work my way through the ranks. And all of a sudden, I'm at some sort of VP level at your company. I've excelled. I've grown the company. I've done all these things. And then I come back and said, listen, I said that in order to get the job. And I apologize for that. I would think if that happened to me, I'd say, you know what? I wish that hadn't happened. But I understand that. Maybe you wouldn't have gotten your foot in the door. You lied in order to get this opportunity. But you know what? I benefited from that lie, so I forgive you. That's basically would be my take. Some people, listen, when I was younger, who came, people say all kinds of crazy stuff, right? You're insecure, you're trying to find your way, people lie. I'm a redemption person. This guy came out on his own. Was he about to get caught? That matters too.
I think he was about to get caught, but
okay.
Yeah, maybe I'm wrong on that.
Because if what he did was just said, you know what, I shouldn't have done this, and I'm sorry, then honestly, I don't have a problem. I saw a couple people on Facebook that had a big issue with it, and I guess what? I respect that. I get it. I'm not going to tell people that they can't be bothered by this. They certainly are allowed, obviously, especially if you were close to someone who was involved in that or who lost their life or whatever. I understand that. But I'm personally, thanks for apologizing. I appreciate that. I'm a redemption guy. Now,
no, he did
apologize.
Very heartfelt, it seemed like. And it came out in a New York Times article, and therefore he had to fess up. But this is my issue with it. You're a stand-up comic, and maybe that's really not what he's going to do anymore. He's going to just do TV and produce stuff and act. But if you're a stand-up comedian, you're in a comedy club, you know, part of the allure is that you're up there, you're telling the truth. You're talking about your life. You're talking about your insecurities, things that happen in your relationship. And, you know, we all know you told this giant lie. And so it takes away from this me believing in this guy when he's up there telling jokes. Yeah. As opposed to where if you're some VP of some company, you know, your job is to do the bottom line.
So I hear what you're saying, but then if he's still successful, then it doesn't matter. Look, so in chat, Eric the actor is saying, would you get mad if someone lied about being in the military? Of course I would. But if somebody said, hey, if I didn't hardly know somebody, I only knew them peripherally, just like I do this guy from The League. And all of a sudden they came out and said, you know what? I used to say that I was in the Marines and I wasn't, and I'm so sorry about that. Then I would forgive them. Now, if you get busted doing it and that's a different thing than you coming and saying, I did this and I regret it. That's a different thing. Now, it's almost like Don Imus. Howard Stern has said things as offensive as Don Imus said a million times.
Of course.
But Howard Stern has never gotten in trouble. Why? Because everybody laughed. And that's the thing. So this guy, he lied. If people forgive him and then they still support his product, then he's not going to get in any trouble. If people no longer can respect him and as a result they can't laugh at him anymore, then he doesn't have the value that he had. But in terms of me forgiving him, as soon as you ask for forgiveness, if you aren't banging kids and you didn't kill anybody and you didn't rape anybody, I'm going to forgive people. I am. If
no, I can I'm the forgive- same way. I mean, I forgive him, but I just, I do feel like it, I can't take him as seriously as I would have, as like, now that I know that.
How seriously were you taking him before?
Well, I wasn't, but I mean, when I, now, like when I saw him at the Improv, I don't even know, I watched a set, to be honest, but I was there to see my friend. And, but now when I watch him, that's going to be on my mind.
Yeah. No,
now,
no,
if he comes out with a really great joke about it and he has to address it and he makes it funny, then I'm like, okay, good. I'll probably get over it real quickly.
Well, look at, we use Michael Vick as an example. So Michael Vick is a guy who did something despicable. He was then jailed and then he came out remorseful. You still have people saying, I don't believe he's telling the truth. And that just bugs the shit out of me. It does. It does. If you can't get past what he did, I get it. I'm not telling people how they need to feel about Michael Vick. But now it's that you don't want to forgive him because you think that he is being... You don't know Michael Vick. You understand? Right. So all I can do is say, is this something so heinous that I can't forgive him if he says that he's sorry? By the way, I'm not trying to find a way that this guy isn't being sincere. It doesn't make any sense for me to try to do that. But if I go and that's all I can think about, and as a result, I can't laugh, and that's the general idea when people see him, mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't matter if he is being honest or not. His job is to be funny. And if he can no longer be funny, then yeah, he won't have work anymore.
Yeah. If his product is still awesome, then that's it'll blow over. People will forget about that stuff. I mean, I've mentioned this. I've quoted J.L. Covan a bunch on this, but
you know, what's J.L.'s take?
He's kind of along with you, lining up with you there.
Do you ever see the documentary, The Woman That Wasn't There?
No.
It's fascinating. It reminds me a little bit of Lance Armstrong. It's a woman who said that she, you know, escaped the tower coming down, or one of the towers coming down, and then she was
maybe
the head.
Maybe he mentioned that. Maybe he somehow. I feel like I heard something about that.
Yeah, she was even the president of some of these support groups and all this stuff, and she helped a lot of people through the family of the person who lost their life that she said helped her. She went to visit them, did all these things, and it ends up she was lying. Now, there's a huge betrayal there because, you know, she's not coming out and saying, wow, I should have never done that, blah, blah, blah. She's basically gone into seclusion, right?
That's right. Basically, well, you got Lance happened. Armstrong in terms of betrayals.
Yeah, and again, I mean, it's like Pete Rose, too. It's like, I want to know why you're coming clean. If you're coming clean because you got busted, I'm grateful that Lance Armstrong was able to help all these people with this Live Strong and all this stuff. And he probably wouldn't have been able to do that if he didn't have the popularity that he got as a result of winning all these Tour de France's, right? And you have to wonder if the people who have benefited from the money that's been poured into cancer research because of him, they said, hey, would you rather this have never have happened? A lot of people would probably say, well, I'm glad that it did. I'm not condoning it, but,
right.
You know, I always like to say, well, where does the crime fit on the scale of things, right? It doesn't mean that we should all go out and lie because then we can say, well, look at all the benefit. No, we should be honest people. We should be honest in general. But guess what? Everybody lies. Everybody. We're built to lie. We are.
Well, I mean, JL's point in general about these things is that it's the worst time ever to do something like this, but it's the best time ever. It's the worst time because it gets talked about and spread over social media. It's the best time because something else happens an hour later and people forget about it.
Yeah.
So, but I want to, you touched on Michael Vick. This is my actual recent pet peeve of mine is that I hear what you're saying about the people, you know, they're still upset at him. But my point is, why let them be upset? Because they've had zero effect on his ability to make a living post-prison. I mean, he's been on three teams now. He's made $50 million. So what if 87 people in front of the stadium with signs? I mean, you really feel that bad for Michael Vick? I mean, could it have? It's hard to think that it could have gone much better since he got out of prison.
Oh, you're thinking every why team are people is, defending him? Yeah, I got you. Yeah.
All these teams they have no issue signing him. He's made literally $50 million since. So it's like people are like, oh, leave that man alone. No, he's doing. He doesn't need to be defended or protected. His post dogfighting conviction career has gone way. It's been way much better than most people thought. So I say let people still yes. be angry at him.
Guess when he's starting his next NFL football game?
Thursday night against the 0-3 Ravens. The Joe Robinson curse lives strong.
In 3 days, he will be starting against the Ravens. Actually, Rob and I will be at Union Jacks.
Yeah, come on
Union
out.
Union Jacks in Annapolis, Maryland. I think it's Annapolis, Maryland. There's two of them. I'm pretty sure it's Annapolis, Maryland. Do me a favor, check the 98 Rock website just to make sure of that. But yeah, we'll be there for pregame. Or you can just listen to 98 Rock, and they'll be calling me, asking me how things are going at Union Jacks. I'll probably say they're going well.
You're breaking up on me. Is that happening to everybody else?
I can hear him.
Okay.
Cool. It's all is important.
Hey, this guy that I work with, Maranzio Vance, he's a super funny dude. And he opens for Daniel Tosh. And he told me about the routine that Tosh does, and I thought it was pretty cool. Is that they go to Vegas to do these shows, and you know, they fly in. Well, Tosh flies on a private plane, but Maranzio just takes a regular plane. But they get to the casino, they go in, they check in, they do the gig. He does 20, Tosh does an hour. They go to eat, and then they go into the high-end poker area of the casino or gambling area for the high rollers. They have their own separate table. It's just him. It's Daniel Tosh. Daniel Tosh's road manager and the other comic, Maranzio, the guy I just work with. And they play blackjack with their own table in the high-end area, $5 a hand.
Daniel Tosh is playing for $5 a hand.
But I think that's pretty cool.
No, I think that's super cool. I just don't know if I don't know what Daniel Tosh is worth, but I'm guessing he's worth between $5 and $10 million.
Probably.
So I can't imagine that
I'd be probably making $10,000 at that gig.
Yeah, I don't know that I would be able to play for $5. I'll be, what am I doing? It'd be almost like going on your phone and just playing blackjack on an app.
Yeah, but you're the bar, you're people watching, you're drinking, you're talking.
No, I get that. Just the social aspect of it. But I guess blackjack wouldn't be necessary if that were the case. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, let's say you hit it Daniel Tosh big and you were doing gigs like that and you were bringing an opener. Would you bring me? Would you bring other people? Would you mix?
No, I'd bring you. You're the only one who doesn't bring me. I would clearly bring you.
And what would you do? Would you insist that we have things like that? What would your high roller or comic demands be?
John? No. If I was Daniel Tosh,
you'd be bringing all your buddies to play poker with.
Of course. I like to go out. If I have $10 million, every time I went somewhere cool, I'd ask, you know, my closest friends, used to be Tim, Vegas, you know, all the people that are there in my little inner circle, right? Big James, all the people that are in my inner circle, girlfriend Katie.
Yeah, let's say you got booked at the Borgata. You were going to
bring you all on and we'd all play poker. Yes, that's exactly what we'd do.
Would you pay for my bar bill?
That's what I was just thinking, because when you said they went out to eat, yeah, I'd pay for food. Mm-hmm. I'd pay for rooms, right?
Sure. Well, I'm sure that. The Borgata would probably just...
It'd probably comp us, yeah. I'm staying there. I'm Joe Robinson.
Yeah.
I need X number of rooms, and then you're good to go. Hell, Uncle Mike, who's a friend of ours, when he got married, he got us all rooms at the Sands, which doesn't exist anymore, and got us all a seat in this complimentary poker tournament.
It's pretty cool.
I won it. $15,000. Go ahead.
Nice.
That story, right?
So, yeah, well, tell it again.
Well, I mean, there's not much to tell. It was a poker tournament, but it was in order to get slot players into the casino.
Right.
And there's a little too much poker talk. Robbie's going to get upset. But the thing about it is you'd think that you'd be able to steamroll these people, but you really can't because they don't know the value of a hand. So you really have to wait until you have a good hand. You can't really bluff them. They don't know what their hand is worth. So I had to wait until I would get.
You can't bluff bad players because they always think that their hand is good.
They don't, right? They don't know. They haven't seen cards. Like, I haven't even seen all the cards yet. So I had to wait, and I think I got like ace king two times in a row, and I doubled up, and then I had to wait, and then I was dwindling down, and I got a flush, and I tripled up. Next hand, I had pocket aces. I doubled up, and I went to the table with the most chips. And actually, first place won 15,000. Second place won 5,000. Every other player won 1,000. It only paid 9 spots out of 220. And I walked out of there with $15,000. I remember I never won any money, kind of money like that in my life. So I go down to get my winnings, and they go, how do you want it? I go, what do you mean? They go, well, you can take $15,000 in cash. We can write you a check, any combination. So I said, all right, what should I do? I didn't know. And Uncle Mike goes, get $5,000 in cash and then get a $10,000 check. And I go, okay. Well, you know, this is over 10 years ago. Now all of a sudden I'm carrying $5,000 in cash around in my pocket in Atlantic City. It was the most
I would have got $1,000 in cash.
Of course. I'm a moron, right? I think this might have been 15 years ago. But anyway, whatever. Point is, big win for me.
Now, I guess I'd bring you along if I had. But see, I have other comics that I'd want to help out, you know.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'd bring Mickey Coachella.
Yeah.
Andy Klein. Although, you're going to be the most fun. So
clearly.
I'd probably bring your dumb ass. Yeah. I don't know. Is that it? We're going to wrap up this show?
Yeah, I don't have anything.
Hey, this is this Friday. It's finally happening. The Newly Dead Game. It's our new murder mystery show. We're debuting it at the Arlington Cinema and Draft House. It's just like the last one, that there will be roles for the audience. But some people, they ask me, they think that they have to be in it. And that's not true. It's only if you want to.
No, I think there's 5 people in it.
Yeah. So it's 95% of the audience at least isn't going to be in. And they're just going to be watching. But it's 7:30. Is that it? Yeah, 7:30. This Friday, that's October 2nd, at the Draft House. Go to ArlingtonDraftHouse.com for tickets.
Is it Arlington Draft House or Arlington Cinema and Draft House?
It's the website's Arlington Draft House.
Okay, got it.
But it's called the Arlington Cinema and Draft House. It's essentially, we've created you're on the TV set of a game show, like a couple's game show. And then, of course, a murder happens. Not to give too much away, but Justin Schlegel and Eric Woodworth will play a gay married couple.
Yeah. That's right. We're progressive. Very progressive.
We're very progressive. It's going to be hilarious. Joe has more of a role this time. I have more of a role this time. So I don't know if that's good or bad for the show, but we'll find out.
Yeah,
and Robbie has put together another amazing montage video that if you saw the first one, we have a similar type thing. But this one, I believe, is even funnier.
People who came would get upset about the amount of participation that we had in it the last time. And I remember thinking, you know, this thing, we wrote it and put the whole thing, it's hard to do. Now I got to also be in it.
Yeah, it's going to be stressful.
Yeah, this one is going to be super, super stressful. But
we have a lot of work to do. We have 2 more rehearsals this week just to get ready.
It's tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow. So come on out. Again, that's this Friday, October 2nd. And then we're doing the same show October 25th. That's at Magoobies. It's a non-Ravens game day. They're playing that Monday night. So if that is an issue for you, don't worry about it. And then breaking murder mystery news, we're debuting yet another one, a Christmas holiday-themed one for Saturday night at Magoobies, December 26th. Tis the season, fa-la-la-la-la, murder, Secret Santa, office party gone wrong. So look for that coming up in December. I guess that's the show. Joe, have a wonderful trip with Katie. We look forward to hearing all about it in 2 weeks.
Thanks. If you want to see me before I set off, Union Jack's in Annapolis on Thursday, Rob will be there as well.
Yes.
Murder Mystery on Friday, Rob will be there as well. If you want to see me in Punta Cana, come on out, but Rob will not be there.
I will not be there, damn it. See you guys.
See ya.
Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.